It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. In this episode of the It's Going Down podcast, we talk with people across the country involved with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, or IWOC, which is a part of the Industrial Workers of the World, or the IWW, one of the groups that has officially signed on to endorse the upcoming August 21st prison strike. IWOC was one of the organizations that was pivotal in supporting the 2016 prison strike, which kicked off on September 9th, the anniversary of the Attica uprising, and spread to prisons across the U.S. and even into Mexico and Greece. Solidarity actions took place across the U.S. and the world and marked the turning point in how prison slavery under the 13th Amendment is viewed in the society. Wanting to know more about what is going on this August, we talked first with Karen from Gainesville IWOC about the upcoming strike, repression that prisoners are facing for organizing, as well as what's been happening in Florida prisons since Operation Push kicked off in January. We then talk with Brooke from Oakland IWOC about the importance of the strike, the prisoners' demands, as well as the continuous wave of action from the inside that's happened over the past few months. We close by talking to two IWOC and IWW members that were present at an international gathering of anarchist and anarcho-syndicalist labor unions, organizations which have agreed to stand in solidarity with the strike. We talk about the importance of international solidarity and how we can hopefully see this grow in the future. Thanks for joining us. Let's get into it. Okay, we're joined here today with Karen from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of Gainesville. Karen, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Good. Last time you were on the show, we were talking about Operation Push. Can you just tell people what all has been happening in Florida prisons since Operation Push began at the start of this year?
A lot. For starters, it's been a roller coaster, and I think we can definitely say the fight is on. The state responded with, right off the bat with a lot of their normal censorship and lockdowns that we saw. We had a complete communication blackout for a couple weeks where we heard absolutely nothing from the inside. After a while, we were able to piece together that about 17 camps participated in the MLK work stoppage. And since then, the Department of Corrections has really just ramped up their retaliation. We have, since Operation Push, we have had Juneteenth, which was just yesterday. Florida prisoners picked up the Texas call for action, and we had a few facilities go on strike here, and that was met with a lockdown. We have had a ton of demonstrations since Operation Push at prisons, at administrative offices, at headquarters of the Department of Corrections, at county jails, at detention centers, at public plazas, at parole offices. The word is really getting out down here. And we've also had the Fight Toxic Prisons Conference and the IWOC Conference to kind of help solidify everybody on the same page as we head towards August 21st. I think here in Florida, we have our work cut out for us with the level of retaliation that the state has ramped up. Just this week, they have started issuing trespassing warrants to people who stop and speak to protesters or who join protesters outside of facilities so that they cannot visit their loved ones any longer. You may have heard, since Operation Push, the Department of Corrections has decided to cut contact visitation in half, going from every weekend to every other weekend. And not only that, but to limit the hours from 8 down to 2 that they're required to provide per day. They've also made a move to cut $28 million from rehabilitative, quote-unquote, programming, such as drug rehab, mental health counseling. These are all in direct retaliation for the inside-outside organizing that's been going on. So those are the sweeping, you know, retaliations. However, we've seen a lot of focused retaliation on the key players in this movement here in our state, and the loudest voices, the best organizers, are sitting in confinement for the most part, and have been, not just since Operation Push, but many in and out since September 9th, 2016. So we're dealing with that as well, being that once they're in confinement, the communication almost stops, and not to mention there's only four camps in our state that are slated as closed management camps, which is what we're seeing organizers ending up at. They are getting charged with phony disciplinary reports, sent to confinement, and then recommended for what's called closed management. You're sentenced to anywhere from 6 months to a couple years. You get sent to one of four camps, generally far away, up in the panhandle, and you lose your gain time, you lose your privileges, you have no visits, you have no access to the commissary, the emails, the phone, the way other prisoners do. So it's intense retaliation. Right now, you know, in the wake of the conferences, we've been able to kind of, like I said, get on the same page moving forward and be able to share a lot of lessons that we've learned, a lot of the skills that we've picked up, a lot of the tools that we and resources we've created to deal with this retaliation, and we're all agreed that, you know, direct support for inside organizing and supporting the family members on the outside and the incarcerated people on the inside is where our energy needs to be focused as we move towards August 21st national prisoner strike.
So has all these attacks, has that made organizing harder? Because I'm sure a lot of people would say, like, well, you know, by people organizing on the outside, they've impacted the prisoners, and that might scare people away from getting involved. Is that what you're seeing, or is it the opposite?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit of both. There's a lot of people who've been dealing with this shit for so long, and they know the score, and they are ready to fight, and they're... You know, they know that when the Department of Corrections bans somebody from visiting, that is their action. That is them further separating, dividing people, silencing people. And for us to respond to that with being silenced makes no sense. We have to fight harder. There's a lot of people that see that now. You know, it's a war. And they made a move. We can retreat, or we can get stronger and fight harder. However, you know, like you pointed out, there's a lot of, you know, regular folk whose loved ones are inside, and they are not willing, and some of them close maybe to the end of their bids, they're not willing to, you know, fuck with that game time, and I don't blame them at all. So, you know, we've got so many people locked up down here that comes with a lot of outraged community members as well. So we don't have any shortage of people who are pissed off, who recognize these tactics as retaliation, as harmful, and they're not going to back down. We've kind of put together a mix of like entry points to this movement. So people who do not want to engage in direct action and risk being identified, risk their loved one being transferred, you know, there's other ways that they can get involved and support this movement. In the big picture, you know, that's what they're doing. They're trying to scare people, and, you know, it's a system that has preyed on these communities for so long that people are scared, and it is effective, you know, with some communities that they are, you know, and a lot of the reformists, I notice a lot of the reformists seem to respond to these retaliation efforts with, oh no, we better stop, back down, and just, you know, fight through the courts. And then you have your abolitionists who don't trust the courts and see past the courts and want to take it right to the streets. And I think an important component of it is that we're always asked to be outside of a prison when we show up. We're not there to instigate, you know, we're there to support, we're there in solidarity. Yeah. So the people inside asked us to be outside, and we're not going to let that call, you know, be ignored.
What's the difference, would you say, between the prison strike that took place in 2016 and the call for the national prison strike starting on August 21st?
I think the difference is that we're better prepared. We're a bigger movement. We're a stronger movement. I walk alone. Our chapters are, you know, popping up, getting bigger and stronger. I mean, we just have more resources, more knowledge of how to move forward. I think, you know, there'll be some tactical changes, you know, based on lessons learned. But I think the biggest difference is that we have a lot of coverage. I mean, we have had a ton of coverage here coming out of Operation Push, over 60 news outlets across the world, all kinds of demographics of listeners and readers. So I think we have a lot more to work with.
Yeah. Well, yeah, totally. Well, let's talk about the IWOC conference that happened. You know, you mentioned that IWOC is getting stronger. People are getting on the same page. Can you just talk a little bit about the conference and how it relates to getting people ready for August 21st?
Sure. You know, being that IWOC's only a few years old, and within IWOC, some of our chapters are very new. We just turned a year here in Gainesville. And, you know, we kind of jumped into this in the middle of a fray, so there hasn't really been an opportunity to kind of process it all, put it together. And, you know, we've been constantly moving and constantly hit with new challenges every other week here in Florida anyway. So having everybody in the same room, you need to actually meet some of these people who you've been organizing with for a year, and really strengthened our chapter and our commitment to the movement. I think it helped, you know, make it concrete and real. Like, we were part of an actual network that stretches across this country that is, you know, really inspiring and powerful. So being that it was, you know, a conference to get business done, you know, we did a lot of skill sharing, technological, organizational, tactical. We shared tools that our individual chapters have built, or people from the inside have put together for us, such as what's called the extraction plan that came out of our first inside branch, which is basically a protocol for responding to repression, which is great because it, you know, it's an actual document with step-by-step instructions on how to respond to retaliation and repression, which is great for new chapters who are kind of don't know, you know, what steps to take in clear order. We shared other tools like how to fight mailroom censorship. We definitely walked away with a better understanding of the, you know, the structure and the process of IWW and IWOC and how to apply that to prison organizing. Also, one of the main themes of the conference was how we can better center voices of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people, you know, who are most affected by this issue and should be the leaders of this movement. So, you know, all of that together really helped us kind of solidify our message of abolition versus reform, especially with all of this public attention and all of the media coverage. We have to be really careful to kind of pick apart, you know, reformist measures and abolitionist agendas. So I think being in the same room and hashing all that out was phenomenal and exactly what we needed leading into August in the summer.
Yeah. Well, let's now turn towards the Fight Toxic Prisons conference. Just real quick, what is Fight Toxic Prisons? You know, why does it have its own conference? And what were some of the things that people were talking about there?
Okay, so Fight Toxic Prisons is a collective of different groups and organizations that organize at the intersection of mass incarceration and environmental justice, meaning that, you know, ways in which mass incarceration, prisons, confinement are environmentally unjust. They disproportionately affect poor people. Prisons generally exist in toxic places where toxic industries once were, contaminated water. I mean, the list goes on and on. So, you know, that's what FTP does. The difference, it's the difference between the conference and the convergence is that it is a bunch of different groups coming together. I mean, it was a ton of different topics covered. I mean, there is the Eighth Amendment and, you know, how it can be applied to toxic conditions, safe drinking water, undocumented struggle and resistance in immigration detention centers, organizing behind bars, disability justice, queer and trans prisoner support, inside-outside solidarity, legislative and legal efforts, community alternatives to the drug war. There was a bunch of speakers. We had Bryant Arroro, who's at SCI Frackville up in Pennsylvania. He's on the steering committee of FTP. Carrington Keys of the Dallas Six was there. Mike Africa, whose you know, mom was just paroled, as you, I'm sure you know. Kinetic Justice did a call in. So it was very inspirational. It's a really good, the FTP conference is a really good way for newcomers to come and learn a ton of shit about this movement, whereas the IWOC conference is for members to, you know, like I said, to move through an agenda and conduct actual business,
right?
You know, internal business. So the FTP was great. We had a big march through the streets of Pittsburgh, stopping at a couple different famed polluters' offices, oil and fracking companies such as EQT and NRG, stuff like that, took over the streets, crossed a bridge. It was pretty great. It's exactly the kind of, you know, fire that we need lit and keep going leading towards August. It was really refreshing and inspiring, I think, for all of those different groups to come and share that knowledge. And I mean, to have the political prisoners there, they're always come, their presence is so, you know, repped at the FTP convergences, and that is really reminds us what we're doing all this for. You know, when you see the people who have been in the struggle for decades and are still smiling and still excited about it, and it's really hopeful. It's really helpful to take back here to Florida with our kind of like budding revolutionaries that we have inside, who are just now entering these stages of repression where they're, you know, like I said, getting hit with confinement. You know, to be able to connect those people together is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Just real quick, as far as IWOC or in other and organizers like yourself understand, how big is August 21st going to be? I mean, how many states do people know that are going to be involved, or do we even know that information, or can we talk about it?
I wouldn't want to speculate even this early. I mean, it's already taken off. I'm hearing so much talk about it, you know, and I know that here in Florida, people are preparing inside or preparing for it already. And, you know, MLK and Juneteenth were ways to kick off the year and the summer and to kind of practice, you know, for this big national strike that that Florida participated in the first time with no preparation. And so we're really excited to see how it goes with preparation this time and with a solid network building. And I think it's going to be big. I think, you know, we definitely have a handful of states on board already, and it's only going to grow from there.
Mm-hmm. And for people listening, you know, maybe they were involved in the prison strike in 2016. Maybe they just saw it take place. Maybe they came into the movement afterwards and they just heard about it. But why is it so important for people on the outside to start to get organized and think about kind of how they're going to participate in supporting this struggle?
Well, I mean, that's what it comes down to. You know, if there's nobody outside organizing, supporting, listening, standing in solidarity, then the movement inside dies. You know, one can't exist without the other. So we have, you know, more movement, more resources out here. We have the ability to get shit done that they can't do inside. Without that, a solid network out here, it's really disheartening for those inside. I'm not saying that, you know, a rebellion needs outside support. I think that it is really helpful, and in order to sustain a long-term movement, you know. But I'm a firm believer that it's going to happen one way or the other, so it can happen, and we can see, you know, another South Carolina or we can partner with our people inside and be that voice and, you know, those eyes on the system to hold them accountable as much as possible. I think we really need to ramp up our direct action, as you know, coordinated with the inside actions, so that it's not so easy for prison administrators to sweep stuff under the rug and silence those inside, you know, if they have us carrying their voice.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about in closing, or anything else you want to touch on in regards to August 21st?
Yeah, I would just like, I think that one of the things that, now that this movement, like you said, is sweeping and it's getting a lot of attention from a lot of different groups and a lot of different demographics, I think it's really important for us to be very clear moving ahead about, you know, reconciling these reformist desires with our abolition agenda. I think, you know, there's a really interesting conversation coming out of this with these two kinds of worlds coming together to fight this battle. So I would like to, you know, maybe just remind people that to spend our energy getting people out, and that if our efforts result in a larger union, in more worker solidarity, and less people in prison, I think that's, you know, a really good starting place. So I would urge people to get on board and help this be successful, because it's, you know, as we've seen in the last couple of years, it's only growing. It's not going away.
Yeah, and, you know, one last thing that I would say, this conversation of kind of like reform versus abolition, we see this playing out right now with Trump taking a step back, now saying that they will not separate families anymore, and a lot of liberals kind of, you know, applauding this move, where I think, you know, there was a lot of power in originally saying, like, no, we're out to abolish ICE, and that's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, you know, what is reform? Like, what is that even? Can you reform a exploitative and predatory system? And when you hear the news talking about reform, you got to be, you know, a little wary, because that just means that it's finally, you know, maybe reached beyond what they had, the intended consequences of the systems they put in place, right? Like, reform means just getting it back to where it was just fucking over black people, you know, when it comes to prison. And let's get, you know, when I hear, like, liberals talking about reform, it means that, oh, hey, wait a minute, this is affecting us now, too. Wait, what? We need to contain it back to its original purpose, you know, which is to control the certain demographics of our population. So, I don't know. That was not as eloquent as I would hope. We're trying to figure these lines out and draw them as clearly as possible. But I just think whenever the media picks it up and we do have, you know, a lot of attention like this, it's our responsibility to really control that narrative towards abolition. And while still, you know, leaving room for people to have an entry point into this movement and maybe support some reformist efforts that result in less people in prison. You know, like we always talk about in our branch, there's plenty of reformist groups out there putting energy towards those measures. There's not too many groups out there supporting straight slave rebellion. So I'm going to focus my energy on the direct action. Not that I couldn't get on board, and maybe I won't help support some certain reforms, but there's plenty of people doing that, and I think we need more people doing this. So I like to concentrate my energy on direct action.
Yeah, completely. And I think this is where taking a page from the abolitionist movement, you know, in the United States is really helpful. And just, you know, looking at, you know, they describe themselves even at the point of being fanatical, that they were not going to deviate, you know, from the call of completely abolishing racial slavery. And I think that's exactly where we need to continue to go towards. But thank you so much for joining us. If there's anything else you want to say, or any shout outs, or if you want to tell people how to follow you or the groups that you're involved in.
Yeah, Gainesville IWOC. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, National IWOC, incarceratedworkers.org, fighttoxicprisons.org. I would love to give a shout out to Julius Smith. He is one of our amazing prison rebels down here in Florida who is just getting totally fucked over, and we're having a hard time finding support for him, legal and otherwise. So there is a page up on our Fight Toxic Prisons website about supporting Julius, and if people feel moved to do so, I would really encourage people to check it out and support him in any way you can.
Okay, we're going to be talking today with an organizer from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee about the national prison strike that's going to set off on August 21st. Do you just want to introduce yourself real quick for the audience?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Brooke. I'm an organizer with the Oakland chapter of IWOC, and I'm also a media rep for National IWOC.
So from what you have seen, how has IWOC itself changed since the historic 2016 prison strike? And what lessons do you feel that the organization has learned to support this new strike?
As somebody that was basically pulled into the work around the 2016 strike, I don't have a lot of experience on what it was before, because I was one of those people that was basically recruited by the lead up to that strike. And basically what put IWOC on the map. But what I can say is the kind of differences between then and now, there are some chapters that have faded, and there are a lot that have grown up. We've got a lot of new chapters springing up. I think a lot of people are drawn to kind of the long-term work. And I think people are coming to IWOC out of the prisoner support network much more markedly than they are, out of the IWW at the moment. It's kind of a split. Initial, big chapters that were doing a lot of heavy lifting around the 2016 strike were basically brought into existence and helped along by being extensions of, big local IWW, general membership branches, GMBs is what they called. So they basically had a lot of capacity to start with, and it was kind of like the honeymoon. It was basically like an introduction to the work. There's a lot to be done, full bore, a lot of immediate attention, and something really took off, and then it grew really quickly, and then a lot of catch-up in the aftermath in terms of trying to develop as chapters, trying to maintain correspondence with a lot of prisoners, and then a lot of growing pains. There's been 2 years since then. I'd say right now the main differences are, a lot of the local chapters are much more involved in local fights, whether it be Gainesville with fighting with families to maintain visitation rights and fighting toxic conditions inside prisons and outside prisons, whether it's Milwaukee fighting to close the MSDF, the Secure Detention Facility, which is basically a downtown torture facility, or it's New York fighting gang validation and their attack on the Bronx 120, that IWOC chapters now are a lot more integrated into their local contexts and taking on a wider breadth of work, and have kind of weathered the peak, the kind of high of kind of working on something that gained national attention right off the bat with a national strike, and then kind of the leveling off afterwards with the repression, and then kind of the prospect of running a marathon as opposed to the sprint at the beginning, and people have got their legs underneath them, and and people got different approaches to the work. I think we're a lot wider as a network in terms of experience and focus, and along with that comes different ideas about how to proceed with the work. So we've got healthy tensions within the organization. People are just proceeding on just kind of assumptions about what we're all about. People have more defined ideas about how to go about things, and it's a nice, healthy, shall I say, dialectic, to get all Marxist about it. I think that's the state of it. In terms of bigger or smaller, I think we're actually bigger now in terms of local chapters. We're certainly bigger in the way that we have an inside chapter that's been chartered, like the first industrial union branch chartered inside a prison, like ever, even though they've all been thrown into solitary after they sent their names out.
Right.
And we've got a couple other like people applying, you know, a couple other facilities applying to be recognized as inside branches. So it's working. I mean, progress.
Now, this is going to be a huge question in itself, but how has the prison movement inside changed since 2016 and the prison strike that took place then? Is it the same formations that are calling for this new strike? And what is the current status of the groups such as the Free Alabama Movement currently, or rebellious facilities such as Holman in Alabama, which were part of the 2016 strike? I know that's a huge breadth of stuff to talk about, but...
Yeah, I mean, because there are like 1,400,000 people in federal and state, you know, prisons. That's a huge amount, and like 2.3 total in county jails and juvies and detention centers. So we can't speak for them all, but the folks that self-describe as part of this prisoners like movement, the human rights movement that's coming into being. Well, to put it bluntly, like repression is no joke. The initial leadership that stood up in 2016 got hammered. A lot of them are still in solitary from that time. And basically, you know, a lot of them, you know, aren't expecting to get out. Alabama unleashed all sorts of repression and violence on the facilities that proved to be like really centers of the strike and activity and organizing in 2016. And repression works. Violence works. They released a bunch of people out of protective custody. They basically sow violence among the dormitories. They basically transferred people all over the state to what's called breaker units, where breaker units are basically facilities that are set up to break prisoners of their will in terms of isolation and communication management, or they call behavior modification units. Some of the leadership is still in there. Free Alabama Movement is participating in this wave that's happening this year. But the thing is like with prisoner uprisings, whenever one layer of leadership gets smashed, another one steps up in its place. And that's like one, intensely inspiring, and two, like a good lesson for the outside, just on leadership in general. For as hierarchical as like inside prison structures can be in terms of like who has reputation and who has pull, as soon as one like layer of leadership gets hammered and thrown into solitary, there's another wave right behind them. This was shown during Operation Push, where the people that called for Operation Push in the Florida strike, like not long ago, those weren't the same people that basically rose up during September of 2016. All the people in 2016 were still in solitary. This is a completely new wave of people that had stepped up to basically call something. And the same is happening now. There's a core leadership, and there are other people like affiliated. It's slightly different, but wider. And that's kind of all I'll say for now to like just maintain security.
Sure. And what has pushed so many prisoners to the point of striking on August 21st? What are the demands that people have, broadly speaking?
Well, what has pushed them? I'll say three things. And these are like the three prongs, the three aims of the strike, the three ways they want to push. That's the same way as saying like what's pushed them to strike. Basic conditions, complete abandonment, dehumanization. Basically, a lot of austerity being played out within the prison system, cost-cutting, no rehab, complete dehumanization, and essentially slavery in all its aspects. Not only in terms of exploited and forced labor, but being treated as an object for exploitation and source of profit, just your body being a source for an institution to basically pull budgetary money. But slavery in all its aspects. An arbitrary violence visited upon black and brown bodies and poor whites. Living basically what's called, you know, they refer to themselves this way too, as living a social or civil death. Basically being refused all aspects of humanity or even of citizenship or of basic recognition as a human being. So, essentially their strike is a challenge to the mainstream discourse and also politicians that to basically recognize exactly what they're going through and to force their situation into the public eye and kind of the mainstream public discourse. Number two, I would say, would be the lateral violence, what we saw in Lee, South Carolina, in the way that the system successfully sets up lateral violence, violence between different sets, different crews inside, to basically keep the prisoner population off balance, self-policed, and with a huge boundary, with a huge obstacle of beef and violence between each other to keep them from uniting against the primary predator, the prison system itself. And that's specifically what pushed this this iteration of prison leadership to call the strike this year as opposed to next year. They had previously surveyed the political landscape inside and out, and we're speaking of working towards a strike in 2019 until Lee, South Carolina happened, where due to gladiator match setups, where basically jailers will set up rival sets within the same dormitory to duke it out. We'll basically close the gates of a dormitory and then basically tell guards, guards will basically tell prisoners, go get your man, quote unquote, and then let the blood flow. This is what happened in Lee. In addition to the Lee warden basically confiscating all lockers within dormitories, therefore pushing the thieving and the beefing inside to record heights. So this is essentially, the riot was a setup and bodies were stacked. Seven inmates lost their lives. They are all due to neglect, and the deaths occurred due to lack of medical attention. They all bled out. Bodies were stacked at the gates of some of the dormitories in this institution. After that, a lot of the core strike leadership basically reconvened and said, we can't let this stand. We gotta go. We gotta go now. This can't be allowed to happen. So a good chunk of the organizing effort is towards basically galvanizing prisoners as a class. To basically put aside and call ceasefire amongst each other, to basically put aside their beefs and identify the primary predator, the prison system itself, and take that tool away from the jailers of this secondary lateral violence, take this away from them as a means of controlling them. I'd say third is also the historical moment. Every few decades, there's a period of reformation, a period where the prison system faces conversations of reform and modification and kind of a reestablishment of legitimacy. Last one was basically in the 70s. Right now, due to a number of factors that are kind of debatable, we're in another one of those periods. Mass incarceration, quote unquote, a term for all its failures and kind of, it's kind of a problematic term in and of itself, is within the mass public discourse. 13th, a movie basically made a dent within the public mind. The New Jim Crow, also a book that was basically popular. So this is a one of those reform periods. Except that it's a conversation that's going on the outside that, by and large, prisoners are not admitted to. There are organizations that have ties inside, but recognition of the prisoners' movement as a force, unto itself, hasn't been forthcoming. So the strike is also a bid to basically propel their voice into this mainstream conversation about reform and into the movement itself. No one speaks for us. This is prisoner-led, prisoner-organized, and we're going to have our say, right, essentially.
Well, for people on the outside, there's just so much going on right now, from Occupy ICE to just today it was announced that the courts were going to allow Trump's Muslim ban to go forward. Why is it important for people on the outside to support the strike starting on August 21st?
Well, all due respect, and I realize you're kind of asking me questions that I can kind of expound on to basically hype the strike, but that's a really white question.
Okay.
And essentially you're asking, why defend members of your own community? if you are actually speaking to black and brown populations or poor whites, like, they already get it. We already get it. You know, like, why defend yourself against, like, destabilization and subjugation of your own community? And it's basically self-defense. So essentially that question is basically asking, why should populations that aren't immediately affected by, like, imprisonment and torture, like, give a shit? You know, and I could construct some reason, some big reason. I could construct a really personal one. But if I have to put it in, like, abstract political terms to get these people to give a shit, this is everything the left basically asked for, a rapidly politicizing and multiracial, like, movement that's basically self-organized, that targets the system itself, you know, that's basically pushing the envelope. This is everything you've been asking for. It's being handed to you. So you can either step up or just stop pretending.
Right.
You know. And also, for people from these communities that are under attack, of which I count myself as one, it's an issue of self-defense. You know, defend your people. Like, these aren't the prisoners. In the same way that it isn't the homeless. These are neighbors. These are brothers. These are sisters that are behind jail. You know, I want to fight the prison system as much, you know, on the kind of the grand scheme in politicized terms, as I do to basically defend my family. I mean, so issues of public safety, social control, and basically how we take care of each other, and how we repel attack. Like, these are all essential questions to a liberatory movement. These are all central to what's going on with the prisoner strike. You know, so I think the question, more aptly put, is, like, how can you not get involved?
Right. We've got about 2 months before August 21st. So what should people and groups be thinking about in the lead up to the strike? And what kind of actions and what are some basic things that people should be doing to get organized to prepare for the strike setting off on the 21st?
Okay, I'm going to rephrase your question again, that the strike work is now. It isn't August 21st. It is now. You know, it is not just preparing for that date, and that it's declared that repression is already underway. You know, we've already had like action spark off in Angola with prisoners sitting down after the strike was announced in direct relation to the strike. You know, these are strikers that are basically wildcatting, you know, pushing it. And we had another one happen in Missouri, another wildcat with them pushing it, you know, committed to the strike and saying, just let's go now. But they took over a work farm and destroyed the manufacturing facility where they're forced to work.
Right.
We've had to do repression call, like, campaigns for each of those instances, and for Rasheed Johnson being tortured in Florida, and for the Ken Ross strikers that are still in solitary from 2016. Like, the anti-repression work is now. Like, the media work is now. It's not to wait for August 21st. So I would say to folks on the outside, like, what to do right now? Well, one, the asks are pretty straightforward. One, like, call during the phone actions. Like, there's going to be more, like, phone actions called. And the more we have people on the inside backs, like, the more they can endure, and the stronger that inside-outside alliance is, the stronger their movement and our movement will be. The next one will be happening on July 2nd for all the brothers in Vaughan that are still facing torture from last year's uprising. I'd say, one, get educated. Like, start following, like, on Twitter at IWWIWalk, or start following Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. Start following the hashtag, you know, hashtag August 21st, hashtag prison strike, and read the demands. Like, become the expert to basically do that outreach. You know, you can be a foot soldier, or you can actually start, like, facilitating the involvement of others. There are going to be, like, materials out there to basically print and paper your town with. Like, we're going to be facing a media blackout. We're going to have to punch through that in order to get the people straight, like, face-to-face. Posters, banner drops, graffiti, stickers. You know, if you got access to a community radio show, call in, ask them why they're not covering this thing. You know, if you don't know of a local group to hook up with, you know, shoot us an email at media@incarceratedworkers.org or at millionsforprisonersmarch@gmail.com. They can hook you up directly with a group that can, like, get you in the mix. Also, like, if you're a member of any group, like, I don't care if it's a knitting circle, I don't care if it's a church, I don't care if it's a, you know, a Maoist, you know, cadre, like, endorse the strike. And it's not the usual leftist, like, you know, gesture. You know, it's not just getting your name on a flyer. Increased visibility, increased support that's visible on the outside directly translates to, like, a defense for strikers. The more visibility they have, the more it checks the jailers and what kind of torture they can bring down on their heads.
Right. Well, in that vein, you know, in 2016, we saw over 50 different cities organizing different events in solidarity with the prison strike. What are some ways that we can increase our capacity and also surpass these numbers, not just in terms of more events, but also in bringing in other sectors of people to the fight?
Well, I think that's already happened in terms of bringing other sectors in, like, slowly but surely. Not just because IWOC is more integrated with a lot more groups in its different, you know, cities and towns. I think the strike right now is getting attention from a wider swath of political movements on the outside. It's not a new thing. It's not kind of hitting them by surprise, like once it pops off, or they read something in Vice and like, hey, wondering what this is. There's a lot more preliminary work going on. I don't know. And seeing actions in 50 different cities, it's kind of a different media environment and different political environment now than it was in 2016. We no longer have that kind of novelty appeal. Trump has been elected. A lot of people are fixated on Trump, even though this regime is simply just a manifestation of what America's been, you know, for 500 years.
Right.
So people's attentions are basically split in a bunch of different directions. So, like, as I say often, I'm not in the prediction business. You know, I don't know if we're going to see actions in more than 50 cities or less. I mean, I'm rather more concerned with, like, quality over quantity. I mean, I'm never going to refuse quantity, and I'm going to push people hard to basically get up off their ass. But in terms of the quality, we already are basically operating on a lot of learned lessons, and, you know, it's already of a higher quality, I would say, in terms of working in coalition, in terms of anticipating repression, more interconnectedness, and also having kind of a core that's there for the strikers, no matter, you know, what amount of media buzz there is. If there's a headline or not, we're still going to be there.
Okay, we're continuing our conversation about the upcoming prison strike that's going to be kicking off on August 21st. Kind of adding to this mix, there's been a recent international conference that's brought together various syndicalist and anarcho-syndicalist labor unions across the world. And how this ties into August 21st is that the various groups involved in this conference have agreed to basically engage in mutual aid and solidarity across borders. And we just saw this on June 25th. There was actions in five different countries in support of J20 and Standing Rock defendants. So we kind of got a taste of what's coming. And obviously there's been solidarity actions between different groups for years now. But we're going to talk to two people that went to this recent conference about everything that happened and kind of like pick their brain about it. But can you first introduce yourselves to us?
Yeah, my name is Anya Wittick. I'm in Minneapolis, and I've been a member of the IWW since 2009.
And my name is Cole, and I'm in Oakland and been a member of the IWW since 2004.
So tell us about this conference you both went to. Who called for it? You know, who was all there, and what was the purpose of it?
Cole was there at the last two congresses that happened, so I'm going to let Cole explain kind of the background to that.
Sure. Yeah, the initially conversation started in 2016 when the IWW was reached out to by CNT and said that there was these discussions going on about doing this collaborative work going on into the future and building some type of a new international Also USI in Italy and FAU in Germany. So at the 2016 convention of the IWW, it was decided to send delegates to the first, what it was just called, a preparatory meeting. And that was in Bilbao, Spain, in 2016. So both myself, I went to that, and the other delegate, who General Secretary Treasurer at the time, also went. And we both made reports from that. And our suggestion was that we continue in this process of forming this new international with these other like-minded unions. And then that led to the second preparatory meeting, is what we called it, in Frankfurt, Germany, 2017. More discussions were had there about what each participating union would need and want to see participating organization. And then it was decided at that time that the next time we met the next following year would be an official founding congress of this new international. So that's what happened just a few months ago in Parma, Italy.
Yeah, and as for who was there, the CNT from Spain and the CNT from France were there, ESC from Greece, and an organization called Base Workers from Brazil, the Vrije Bond in the Netherlands and Belgium. And then there were also greetings sent by groups in Argentina, Morocco, Austria, and Bulgaria. There was also an org from London, the United Voices of the World, the Workers Initiative from Poland, the FOB from Brazil. And then Cole will probably talk later about the GGBO, which is the Incarcerated Workers Organizing in Germany.
So why is it important for all these groups to come together in a dialogue internationally?
I think it was actually evidenced, like you said, on the 25th, and for us, immediately after this organization was founded at the Congress, the very first thing that this organization did, the ICL, the International Confederation of Labor, was pass a statement in solidarity with J20. So it's things like that. It's that sort of international solidarity that can really push forward a movement stronger than if you're just based in one country.
Right. And I think the ending numbers for all the total amount of members that all these groups, encompass is it's 70,000.
That might be generous. That's pretty generous. Yeah, we came up with an estimate a lot lower than that, but that's just of groups that are signed on so far, and the IWW is not officially signed on until all of our membership decides in the general referendum for North America this year. But of those that are, yeah, there's a considerable thousands of members around the world in these participating unions, sure.
Right. I mean, just to, a critical person might say, well, what does it matter, if who cares about the CNT? Like, we're in the United States. Like, what do we get out of anarchists in the United States forming kind of like these mutual agreements or associations with people in other countries? What do we get out of that?
I think it really scares the bosses. It really scares the ruling class when they can see the working class uniting across borders, because we don't, believe in borders. One example is I've, heard about a lot of bosses being really scared when folks do call-ins or phone zaps, if a worker is fired illegally. And the boss gets a call from people in four or five different countries, and they really start running scared.
Yeah, I would add to that, that it, if we recognize that capital and capitalism is globalized, and then our response should be globalized. And I think we've seen benefits to that already in the collaborations we've had in the past. For example, myself and Anya were part of the Starbucks Workers Union, and I was fired actually in 2008 for planning and preparing for solidarity actions for a CNT Starbucks worker in Spain. And so together, CNT and IWW called for a global day of action then, which at that time it was 20 countries, four continents. So for a company like Starbucks that, spends millions of dollars on promotions for being socially responsible, it's a big deal for them to get a black eye in the media across the world, as opposed to what we could just do in one city, one day for one person. You know, if we can say this one person now, you know, reaches across the world, and that really matters, especially to these global corporations.
Right. And broadly speaking, historically, what has been the link between groups in the U.S., such as the IWW and other organizations such as the CNT? And obviously, this is something that we can talk a lot about. But, you know, broadly speaking, you know, have these groups have had relationships in the past?
Yeah. There's a great book that that I got my hands on about the Wobblies internationally. And it was interesting for me to learn sort of the history of when the organization was first founded, because a lot of the issues are the same. You know, the IWW has a lot in common with other syndicalist unions, they were interested in organizing industrially, which was something that was different for a lot of the organizations and unions in other countries. So finding that sort of point of unity, being also in unity regarding being involved in political or electoral type stuff, and those are the same kind of issues that that we talk about today, and how we want to do our organizing and what we want the focus of this organization to be.
Yeah, I would say that historically the IWW, you know, has been you know, supportive of CNT since its founding. Members fought, you know, against the fascists during the war. And since then, there's been, you know, fraternal relations between ourselves and these other unions historically.
Going into the future, I mean, what does this mean for all the groups that are involved? Like, what is the future of these meetings that are taking place? Like, how do you see these things developing?
The at this founding Congress, there was two different breakouts. One was to go over specifically statutes of this new international, and then the other breakouts were for working groups, specifically what we're going to focus on, what we're going to focus our energies on. And one of them was you know, workplace organizing, expansion, and then there was another one. So
training.
Thank you. And so the what the benefit to all these groups, and so far there's one coming up soon in maybe July. CNT is offering their trainings electronically to all the other unions to show how they organize. And we're there's discussion of sending potentially a report from Burgerville or a member from Burgerville to be able to participate in that electronically. But so we share our experiences, we share our tactics in organizing in different parts of the world, and that hopefully the goal is to make us each stronger in our own fights where we are.
A few of the areas that were talked about were like incarcerated workers, which again we'll talk more about later, but the food and retail workers and delivery workers were some of the things that were talked about, and then as well as just gender roles in general.
Before we get into specifically incarcerated workers and the August 21st strike, do you have any thoughts about June 25th? There was basically, from my understanding, out of these conversations and these networks came an initiative that pushed for a day of action across borders. People demonstrated in the U.S. outside of Department of Justice offices and also in other countries outside of U.S. embassies to call for the dropping of J-20 charges. I mean, do you have any thoughts about this kind of, you know, recent development?
I think that's just a perfect example of what it's about, right? That that we're able to show the state what happens when they try and do something like kettle folks and charge them with a bunch of, you know, bullshit charges that, you know, people across the world will come together in protest of those actions.
I think it really lends itself to the whole these preparatory meetings that were happening in Spain and Germany, and then this now founding in Italy. It really speaks to, I think, the spirit of cooperation and compromise it that all of us were willing to work together on, to recognize you know, our commonalities, and that we have one fight and one struggle. So it really was, you know, important to me and to many others, that even though the IWW isn't officially a part of this new international yet, we did spend a lot of time in preparing for this, and then working and compromising and helping with the statutes and organizing the Congress and participating in the working groups and seeing this process through. And because of that, you know, these, you know, our other members of these other unions and organizations, you know, came out in solidarity. And I think if we, you know, can continue to build these strong relationships with these others, it can only get bigger and stronger as we go on.
Well, let's turn now to some of the other organizing that's going on first outside of the U.S. in terms of incarcerated prisoners that anarchists and anarcho-syndicalist groups are doing. Can you just talk about that? You mentioned some of the groups already.
Well, yeah, prior to like I said, we were on the, myself and a member of the International Solidarity Commission were on the committee to prepare for the Congress. And one of the things we were doing was inviting those we wanted that may be interested and we felt fit in with, you know, kind of our core principles. So one of those was the GGBO, which is very similar to Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee in the U.S. They are in Germany. They've got 1,000 members. Very interesting group. They've got outside branches like we do here that support and amplify the voices of those on the inside. They've got 1,000 prisoners as members on the inside. An interesting part that we've added in the statutes of this new international that the IWW proposed was that, you know, since prisoners don't make money more than not, they're preyed upon through, you know, family resources or the work that they are able to do, you know, taking out for room and board, things like that, or for commissary, whatever it is. So they don't pay dues and they won't have to pay dues in this international. So they get just as much voice and vote and participation, can bring resolutions and can do, have just as much activity as a member, albeit without the access to, you know, readily available communication as we do on the outside. They can, they're still full-fledged members of this new international, which I think is really important and can be very empowering for these people in prison, and hopefully can lead to more concerted action, not just in North America, but across the world. There was, so GGBO we invited, but we also reached out to some others. There's one in Spain, I can't relay their names. I don't speak the languages, but there's also one in France we invited as well. So we're interested in building these relationships with others that are doing this kind of work throughout the world. And so there's already been a shown interest of the group in Greece, ESE, again, GGBO, I've had communications with them since the Congress, and we're working on future collaborations. They've also sent in information regarding the strike going on here in North America, but also letting all their members know about this new international so that they can vote on it and decide whether they're going to be members or not.
Well, what does all this say about the possibilities for international solidarity for the prison strike on August 21st? How does this all play into the prison strike?
Plays into the prison strike in that we are able to, you know, prior to the strike in 2016, we were kind of, you know, getting a little bit late in the game. The Free Alabama movement had already gotten the ball rolling, and then we were really trying to play catch up to try to facilitate, you know, correspondence, communication, and building for that. But this time around, you know, we've got plenty of advance notice, so we're able to put on the outside a lot more work and effort and energy into this strike this year. And also, like I said, with this this international, new international that's forming, there's that opportunity now. Like I said, the GGBO is telling all their members about not only the strike happening in the United States, but also of this new international that they can be a part of, which would be, if the IWW joins, would be also members of these, you know, 800 900 currently IWOC inside prison members that we have now. So I think it speaks to the fact that just as we hope for our fight against global capitalism to be strengthened through this international by learning from each other, organizing campaigns, and targeting specific multinationals, that in the same way that prisoners face basically the same struggles, we can learn. GGBO actually has a campaign where they're pushing for minimum wage for all the work that prisoners do. So that's, you know, a tactic that they have among many. But that's one that we could, educate our members about here. And then also, obviously, through the strike actions and those things like that, we can educate their members and other prisoners as well as to what's going on here in the United States. So instead of being localized actions happening and then people just reading about them later and saying, oh, that's a great thing, now we really have the opportunity to link with one another these struggles to have, you know, a much greater impact. It's one thing, you know, to have prisoners shut down a facility in, you know, a state or a couple states in the United States. It's obviously a much bigger issue and a greater discussion if prisons are shut down all over the world.
Right.
The only thing that I keep thinking about is I'm really happy that one of our points of unity was that no cops are allowed in the international, just like no cops are allowed in the IWW. That's an international principle now. And so everybody has signed on that we don't want cops in our unions.
Awesome. Well, anything else you both would like to add either about the conference or the future of international solidarity?
I'm just really excited that the Congress happened and that we founded this organization. You know, one of my favorite moments was at the end when the statutes had been accepted. There was an older Italian woman that, you know, came to tears. She was just so happy that this was started and that this work that's been going on for centuries really can continue between the anarchist and syndicalist unions.
And revolutionary unionist unions. I would just add that as well, that I think it was really inspiring for me to be there. I thought it was a great privilege, and I really have hold out high hopes for the potential not only to target these multinational corporations, but also more broadly and specifically to attack the carceral state, you know, as it is under capitalism, whether it be in the United States or Germany or France or Spain or, you know, Asia, you know, anywhere else, South America. So I encourage people to get involved and to get active. GDC, IWW, one of these revolutionary unions or anarchist unions around the world, and with this prisoner strike that's going to happen August 21st to September 9th.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.